Hi, this is Mike Fry.
And this is Beth Nelson.
And you are listening to Animal Wise Radio, that is streaming, blogging, and podcasting at animalwiseradio.com. Our guest is Nathan Winograd from the No-Kill Advocacy Center. And we have this fascinating discussion going on about no-kill, the no-kill movement. And on break, we were actually just talking with Nathan about how people think of pet overpopulation as an animal problem, but in fact, it really is a people problem. And I want to just kind of jump right back into the conversation by talking about some of the successes to prove that this is a people problem. I would like you to talk about some of the communities that you've worked in that have solved this problem to prove that people can step up and do it if they just choose to.
Well, it started in San Francisco, and in the mid-1990s, when San Francisco was achieving so much great success, the one claim that I kept hearing over and over while I was there was that you might be able to achieve that kind of success in a wealthy, quote-unquote wealthy urban community, but you could not achieve that type of success in a rural community or a community in the South where the argument was there was more poverty, more antiquated views of animals, a type of kind of frontier mentality that viewed animals as mere property. So in 2001, I actually took the opportunity to take over animal control for a shelter in a rural community up in upstate New York in a place called Tompkins County. And took with me the lessons of San Francisco's success, which are those programs and services that I call the no-kill equation, and implemented them at an animal control shelter in a rural community. And within 2 years, we had reduced the death rate by 75%. And at the end of the day, when I left in 2004, the community was saving not only all healthy dogs and cats, but all sick and injured treatable ones and all feral cats. So at an animal control shelter, we did life-saving surgery for dogs and cats hit by cars, we amputated limbs when necessary, and we found all those animals' homes. And since then, other communities have achieved that kind of success, like Charlottesville, Virginia, also an animal control shelter in a rural community, but this time in the South. And last year, they saved 92% of all the dogs and cats, so that the only dogs and cats being killed in Charlottesville's animal control shelter are truly vicious dogs and hopelessly ill or injured animals. So a phenomenal turnaround also by implementing the programs and services of the no-kill equation.
I'm guessing that in Tompkins County, you're talking about this being a rural community, that loads of new money didn't start rushing in the minute you took control or stepped into your new job. And so implementing what you're calling the programs as part of this no-kill equation, it's not like the money truck rolled up so you could just...
Well, that's an excellent question, because the idea that you need more money or you need $1 million or $2 million in order to save lives is really, and I hate to use an animal pun, but let me, it's putting the cart before the horse. Mm-hmm. And
right.
That is not a good idea when your cart and your horse have such a long way to go. And let me give you an example, two examples. First of all, let's look at the city of Philadelphia, which is the animal control agency for the fifth largest city in the United States. In 2004, the year I started working for them, they took in 25,000 dogs and cats and killed 22,000, so almost 9 out of 10. Less than a year later, by implementing core programs and services, they saved 65%. So for the first time in Philadelphia history, an animal had more of a chance of going home alive than being killed within a year, all without a budget increase. And the reason for that is because, contrary to conventional wisdom, saving lives is actually cheaper than it is to kill them. And I'll just give you one or two examples. Take a feral cat, for example. It cost me about $1.67 to neuter that cat. $1.67. If I had to send that cat to a private veterinarian as a shelter, I could have gotten a neuter for about $25. Now, if I were to take in that feral cat, have to hold that cat, and feed that cat, and clean that cat's cage for the 5-day holding period, then kill the cat and dispose of the cat's body, it would have cost me about $100. So by neutering rather than killing, I've saved anywhere from $75 to $95.
I would argue that your saving is actually higher than that, because if you neuter it and release it, you're also not impounding its offspring.
And absolutely. So, and if you look, for example, at San Francisco, going back to our original example, in the 1980s, they were taking in about 20,000 dogs and cats a year. By investing in spay-neuter, last year they only took in about 7,300. So despite population growth and despite the increases in impounds in cities that are seeing spikes in population, here's a city that's growing human-wise but significantly declining. So yes, every dollar that you invest in spay-neuter, you're ultimately not only going to save on the costs of individual animals, but you're going to save because you're not impounding, killing, or holding the offspring of those animals.
And at the same time, you're creating a better tomorrow and ensuring that fewer animals are going to come into the shelter tomorrow.
Right. And, you know, just to give you another example on the cost issue, if I take an animal and I give the animal to a rescue group, not only do I save the cost of holding, killing, and disposing of the animal's body, but I also gain in terms of the job, the public satisfaction with the job I'm doing. And if I adopt the animal myself as a shelter, I get the revenue. And that works across the board. So in Tompkins County, despite a 75% decline in killing, we actually went from an operating deficit, so we were losing about $124,000 a year when I started, and despite significantly reducing the death rate and increasing services, we finished 2 years later with a $23,000 surplus, not with buckets of cash, not with a new shelter, but with cost-effective, life-saving programs and the flexibility and the commitment to see that through to life-saving.
So I'm curious. I've got to go to this question that I wrestle with all the time, because as I said earlier in this the last segment, I've seen a lot of resistance from within the animal welfare community to no-kill initiatives. And I'm curious if you have a sense why that is. It's obviously not because they want to kill all these animals.
Well, let's look at, I'll give you my viewpoint. I mean, if you look at other issues like ending hunting or animals in research labs, that is a platform that animal welfare groups from coast to coast can agree on, that hunting is a terrible idea. But when it comes to killing animals in shelters, it's not someone else doing the killing. It's, in many cases, the animal groups themselves that have taken over the industry of killing. We haven't taken over the slaughterhouses. We haven't taken over canned hunting farms in an effort to, quote-unquote, make it more humane. But we have in terms of killing in shelters. If a city wants to kill a dog or cat, it is my belief that it's not the job of an SPCA or Humane Society to do it for government. And unfortunately, that is the job we've taken over. And so when we talk about killing dogs and cats, we're basically criticizing what would the agencies that would normally be our allies on these other larger animal welfare issues. And unfortunately, the killing that goes on is done at the hands of quote-unquote animal lovers. And these are the people that hold the animal down. These are the people that administer the fatal dose. And unfortunately, these are the people who have been doing it under the entirely false belief that there is no other way. And so there is a resistance to change because they at no point want to say, hey, we don't have to do this anymore, or we didn't have to do it in the first place.
There's a psychological phenomenon that I think, you know, I'm not a psychologist, but I make this up in my head that I can practically see in people who've worked in a very closed-minded, old-style traditional shelter. And it's like a form of denial. It's a way for them to justify what they've been doing all along. It's like they have all these walls and barriers up. And I think it almost comes off as looking kind of like post-traumatic stress disorder.
Well, let me follow up with that and ask you this. I mean, if they truly believe there is no other way, and yet there is a remarkable renaissance in life-saving occurring in places like San Francisco, which used to be a bloodbath,
mm-hmm.
like Charlottesville, Virginia, which used to be a bloodbath, like Tompkins County, New York, which used to be a bloodbath, like Philadelphia, which used to be a bloodbath, even if you didn't believe in the potential that the no-kill paradigm provides, if you are truly dedicated to saving lives, you should seize upon any opportunity that shows promise, because there are, right now, no other alternatives. So rather than condemn or fail to implement programs like trap, neuter, return for feral cats, or all these other programs like off-site adoptions, or high-volume sterilization, or turning to the community and asking them to help. I mean, one of the major obstacles we have here is that shelters see the public as the source of the problem. And so this notion that the public is also capable of great compassion, and if you put out the call, they won't only adopt the cute and cuddly puppies and kittens, but they'll adopt older animals, blind animals, animals with medical problems, animals with behavior problems. That is where we get into this kind of psychological blind spot that they can't see the public as capable of such great compassion, so they don't try to embrace the public. But it's that public that you turn to for volunteers, for donations, and for adoption.
But isn't it also true that sometimes these animal welfare organizations have such a sensitive soft spot about uncovering this issue because they, I think underneath it all, feel bad about the fact that they're doing this killing, that they don't want to put it out in the public. And so, in a way, they end up covering up the problem. People don't see it, and then nobody knows to even step up and do anything about it.
But that only results in more killing. And
right.
Whatever the reason, if they feel bad about what they have been doing when there was an alternative that dates back to at least 1994, if you look at San Francisco as the seminal change in terms of sheltering, they could have said, we didn't know, we thought we were doing the best we can, we now realize that we are in error, we are going to implement these programs and services, and we are going to change the way we've been operating. That is how people who are truly committed to saving lives would act. And I would argue that, unless you claim San Francisco's an anomaly, Tompkins County's an anomaly, Charlottesville, Virginia's an anomaly, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania's an anomaly, Ivan City, Utah's an anomaly, and places like Richmond and other places that are seeing significant success with the no-kill equation, then you are, if you are committed to saving lives, morally and ethically obligated to embrace this paradigm, because what you've been doing for 100 years has not worked. And, of course, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result.
So, Nathan, we just got another minute in this segment, and we can, in our following segment, talk more about it. But let's talk about the programs. Let's start focusing on what are the other programs that they've implemented in Philadelphia and some of these other places besides, say, the feral cat spay-neuter release programs.
Well, that is a big one. But the others, of course, include subsidized spay and neuter, because regardless of people's personal opinions, the cost of sterilization is the biggest barrier to spay and neuter. Using rescue groups, so giving rescue groups access to any animal that is on death row at the shelter, relying heavily on volunteer foster parents to take animals who are too young, too sick, injured, or traumatized before they're ready for adoption, comprehensive adoption programs, including weekend and evening hours, and off-site adoption locations at the PetSmarts and Petcos and other places where people live, work, and play. Programs of pet retention, helping people overcome the problems that may cause them to surrender their pets, like litter box avoidance in cats and things of that nature. Programs to socialize animals in the shelter, medical rehabilitation, public relations, the use of volunteers, but the most important one is a compassionate, hardworking animal shelter director who is not content to hide behind the myth of too many animals and not enough homes.
With that, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with this great conversation with Nathan Winograd from the No-Kill Advocacy Center. We'll be right back.
Although I would like a world of change, it helps me to appreciate those nights and those...
Hi, this is Denise Luke of Feline Rescue. Did you know that there are too many unwanted pets in the Twin Cities? Homes for All Pets Minnesota and Feline Rescue ask you to help spare a life. Adopt, spay, or neuter your pets.
Auntie Ruth's Furry Friends Home Away From Home offers luxury boarding for your pet. While you're on vacation, send your pet to Auntie Ruth's for uncompromised loving care. You and your pet will love the luxury dog and cat suites, grooming services, 24-hour video security, and around-the-clock care. At Annie Roos, we offer specialized care for geriatric, diabetic, and special needs pets, conveniently located on Minnetonka Boulevard in Minnetonka. Stop by for a tour and see why Annie Roos is your pet's home away from home. Visit www.annieroos.com or call 952-936-9000. Annie Roos, setting the standard in luxury boarding for the pets you love.
Hey, cool cats and dogs. On 7th and Arcade in St. Paul, there's an eclectic shop with lots of retro threads. Furniture, books, music, and art, too. It's the Animal Ark Thrift Store. No matter what your style, the Animal Ark Thrift Store has something for you that will be easy on your pocketbook. But best of all, the money you spend there helps Animal Ark to save homeless pets. You can bring your good used stuff there too, which helps the planet by helping to reuse and recycle. Like the finer things in life, but live on limited funds? That's not a problem if you shop at the Animal Ark Thrift Store. We have everything from fine art to jewelry. And when your wild side wants to kick up its heels, you can find your party clothes at the Animal Ark Thrift Store.
Animal Ark Thrift Store.
The Animal Ark Thrift Store. Be there or be square.
Twin Cities residents, get your pit bulls fixed for free. Spaying or neutering your pit will make them a happier, healthier pet while ensuring they're not adding to our area's pet overpopulation problem. The Twin City Pet Fix Program is a partnership between Animal Ark, Cause for Paws, and local veterinarians. Based on available funding, we print certificates that can be redeemed for a free pit bull spay or neuter. Pick up Pet Fix certificates at the Animal Ark Thrift Store in St. Paul or at your local animal control center. For more information, visit the Animal Ark website at animalarkshelter.org. That's animalarkshelter.org. But hurry, certificate supplies are limited, and a sterilized pet is a happy pet.
You are listening to Animal Wise Radio.
I hope for more love, more joy and laughter. I hope you have more than we'll ever need.
Hi, this is Mike Fry.
And this is Beth Nelson.
And you are listening to Animal Wise Radio, streaming, blogging, and podcasting at animalwiseradio.com. We're talking with Nathan Winograd from the No-Kill Advocacy Center. What a fascinating discussion this is.
And I think a hopeful discussion.
Absolutely, because the bottom line is, I'm frustrated with how long it's taken the animal welfare community to come to this, but more and more they are, how solving the quote-unquote pet overpopulation problem is happening all over the United States. There's been a wave of it all over the place, and I think our guest, Nathan Winograd, has been a big part of that movement, and so it's great to have you back on Animal Wise Radio, Nathan.
Appreciate it, and let me just say that, in fact, it is a hopeful discussion, because having worked with at least 50 shelters in communities throughout the United States, from urban to rural, from what we classify as blue states to those that are red states, from those that are liberal to those that are very, very conservative, I see the same thing over and over, and I am firmly convinced that a no-kill nation is not just possible, it's inevitable. And the question, of course, is when. And so it's up to the animal advocates in every community to push the envelope in their own hometown.
Well, right. Nathan, you have several ways that you're trying to get this message across. One, of course, is that you consult with groups all over the country. You have a website as well. And I understand you're writing a book.
I am writing a book. And if people want to learn more about the no-kill philosophy and also how they reform the shelter in their community, I do have a document, a step-by-step guide for advocates and animal welfare folks called Reforming Animal Control, and it's on the website that they can download for free at nokilladvocacycenter.org. But I have finished writing a book. It is going to be published this summer. It's called Redemption, The Myths of Pet Overpopulation and the No-Kill Revolution in America. And the reason I'm most excited about that than a lot of other things is because it's written for the public, not necessarily for animal welfareists, although they will love it, and not just for people in the sheltering industry, although it will get them angry, but hopefully have them see the possibilities for more lives saved. But it's really geared at your average dog and cat lover in the United States, the type of person who might not think about shelters or animals in shelters, but who is crazy about their own dog or cat, and get them involved in pushing the no-kill philosophy in their own hometowns.
I would just like to stop for a second, because I want to make sure I get in a big plug for our local animal control centers. We're fortunate in the Twin Cities metro area to have two very progressive, very cooperative animal control agencies, Minneapolis Animal Control and, of course, St. Paul Animal Control, that we've been working with for many years. Our issue here has typically, historically, not been so much with animal control as some of the very large, wealthy, quote-unquote, humane societies in our area that have just really poo-pooed or refused to look at this model. And so, you know, I think resistance to this has come from a whole lot of surprising places. And I really encourage people to check out Nathan's website, check out his book, and make sure that the animal welfare organizations that you're supporting are following this roadmap, because it's a clear, documented roadmap that works.
It's an opportunity for these organizations to be heroes. Right. Is the way I look at it.
You know, if I had one piece of advice for the animal lovers in your community, and it is quite simple. The agencies and the groups that you should support with your philanthropic dollars, and people might not realize this, but donations, we are truly a nation of animal lovers. Donations to animal charities is the single fastest growing segment of American philanthropy. Unfortunately, people are not necessarily making wise choices with the agencies that they give their hard-earned dollars to. And there's a very simple test. Do they or do they not embrace the concept of a no-kill community, and is it or is it not their goal? If they poo-poo no-kill, you should not reward them with your dollars, because your dollars are going into a black hole of endless killing.
Or if they have big, glossy, colorful ads that say, we never turn any animal away, but they won't tell you what they're doing with them once they get there.
When I ran animal control in upstate New York, we never turned an animal away either.
Right.
We just didn't kill them. And in Charlottesville, Virginia, animal control, they're not turning away any animals. And
but
yet they're not killing them.
But I'm guessing they're letting people know what the issues are. And, because that's one of our big things here on the show, is talking about that transparent operation so people know what's going on.
Absolutely. I mean, the key is to get raw data. How many animals are coming in and how many are going home alive?
Right.
And is that improving every single year? Because if it's not... That there's a serious problem with leadership and the mechanisms going on within that shelter.
Boy, Nathan, we could chat with you for days, I think. But we sure appreciate you. Our guest has been Nathan Winograd from the No-Kill Advocacy Center. We'll be back with another hour of Animal Wise Radio right after this.
Hi, this is Denise Luke of Feline Rescue. Did you know that there are too many unwanted pets in the Twin Cities? Homes for All Pets Minnesota and Feline Rescue ask you to help spare a life. Adopt, spay, or neuter your pets.
Auntie Ruth's Furry Friends Home Away From Home offers luxury boarding for your pet. While you're on vacation, send your pet to Auntie Ruth's for uncompromised loving care. You and your pet will love the luxury dog and cat suites, grooming services, 24-hour video security, and around-the-clock care. At Auntie Ruth's, we offer specialized care for geriatric, diabetic, and special needs pets, conveniently located on Minnetonka Boulevard in Minnetonka. Stop by for a tour and see why Auntie Ruth's is your pet's home away from home. Visit www.auntieruth's.com or call 952-936-9000. Auntie Ruth's, setting the standard in luxury boarding for the pets you love.
Hi, this is Mike Fry, Executive Director at Animal Ark No-Kill Animal Shelter and host of Animal Wise Radio, inviting you to join me and the rest of the Animal Wise Radio pack as we howl it up at the Twin Cities Pet Expo. That's at the Minneapolis Convention Center, February 17th and 18th. meet us at our booth, or join us at the main seminar stage for two solid days of fun. That's the Twin Cities Pet Expo at the Minneapolis Convention Center, February 17th and 18th. There will be doc dogs, dancing dogs, contests, products, prizes, seminars, and a whole lot more. Animal Ark, Animal Wise Radio, and all our friends at the Homes for All Pets partnership will all be there. Visit TwinCitiesPetExpo.com for a list of vendors and activities. You won't want to miss the fun. Are you one of those people who doesn't want to feed your pets processed byproducts and fillers, but you don't know where to get good quality pet food?
Well, now you don't have to go anywhere, because Pet Chef Express delivers premium quality pet foods right to your door.
Simply log on to PetChef.com and select Minnesota, or call 952-890-7850 and they will send you a regular supply of pet food.
No chemical preservatives, no byproducts, just healthy nutrition for your pets, including a selection of frozen raw meat diets.
Can you believe it? Pet food made with natural, free-range meats that are guaranteed free of hormones and steroids.
They have health supplements too, plus all natural treats for both dogs and cats, and natural flushable cat litter.
You can't beat Pet Chef Express for both quality and convenience, and they have over 100 items to choose from.
Log on to PetChef.com today, or call 952-890-7850 to get all natural quality pet food delivered right to your door.